right, so welcome to another episode of the story of Emma Rose. So if you've listened to this one, that means that you've listened to the long and short of it, that part of the podcast, and I gave a quick overview. But what I'm going to do now, I'm going to break it down into little sections, not too short, not too long, but enough so that you can understand exactly what was going on through this entire process. So let's just talk about the whole story of what was going on. So Emma, like I mentioned before, Emma was born on October 9th. She was 7 pounds, 5.5 ounces. And born is, I guess that's a relative word, because my wife, she had a C-section. So technically she was taken from my wife. That's the way I look at it, for a C-section. But she came into this world at 8:46 a.m. And I'm very keen on knowing the time and the weight and the date and everything like that. And just her name alone, some people have asked about it or even questioned, well, why do we name her Emma? Well, that's another story in all in itself, but it's a name that both of us kind of liked. It took us such a long time to come up with her name, Emma. It was quite different than our first daughter, Diana, because her name was picked out long ahead of time. Actually, both births were planned. So we planned to have children. We planned this out. We were hoping to at least say, hey, have a girl, have a boy, and that'll be fine. You know, but it came to a point where, as you know, a boy or girl doesn't matter. But we had a girl's name set out, which was Diana, and a boy's name set out. So when we found out that we were having a girl, we said, okay, then let's find a name. And it took us some while. My wife came up with certain names. I didn't like it. I came up with certain names. She didn't like it. I think it was just one night we were sitting in the bed and the name Emma came up. I'm like, I kind of like that. One of the names similar to Diana, she has her first and a middle name, can actually be one full name. Her name is actually Diana Lynn. Her first name is just Diana. So we wanted something similar for Emma. So Emma Rose was a popular name. And we kind of liked it. Said it flows well. Emma Rose. And that's how we got her name, Emma Rose. Now, again, during COVID, PMH is technically on lockdown. I mean, complete lockdown. So I was not allowed to be there in the room or even at the hospital during Emma's birth. So my wife had to go in there on her own, and she had to deal with that situation on her own with her and the doctor pretty much. So she had birth that morning, like I said, about 8:26 a.m. on October 9th. That's the day that she was born. My wife said that she saw her for a short time, and then they took her away, mostly to clean her up or whatever. I'm not too sure. So they took her away, like I say, probably to clean her up or whatever. But they found that something was wrong. She wasn't breathing properly, so he wasn't getting enough oxygen. So something was actually going on. So they thought, okay, it's either going to be the lungs or it's going to be the heart. So they did tests for the lungs to see if it was good. It was clear. Say, okay, it's not the lungs. So now they did the test for the heart. And then that's when they realized there's a problem with the heart. So they were talking to my wife about it. I didn't know about it because I was still home, just like, yay, baby is born. She's okay, blah, blah, blah. And then I get a call, and the doctor, Hannes, is the one who called me, and he started to explain. So, okay, here's what's happening. The baby is okay, but we have a problem. The problem is that the baby was born with a heart defect. Now, that's where my entire being just sunk. Like, what? He's like, okay, here's what happened. So you're nervous. You're standing still, not realizing what's going on around you, and you're listening to see, okay, well, what's the problem? What's happening? And he explained that this thing called the transposition of the great arteries. Again, it was a big word to me. And I know that some persons, they hear it and still don't know what it means. But technically, and I'll explain that a bit later, as I kind of did in the first episode, that the great arteries, one that takes oxygen to the lungs and to the body, they kind of like switch so they don't mix. So you don't have oxygenated blood flowing through the body. And he explained this whole thing. I'm hearing him, but I had no idea what he's talking about. So again, I just felt it a little bit, and yeah, I cried. I cried a little bit, but it wasn't a lot. Just like a little whimper. I'm like, okay, I hear what you're saying. So what's the deal? He says, it's not a problem. It's fixable. He really assured me that this is not a big deal. This happens every so often, and you know, we're just going to get things in order. So I said, okay, that's good. That's not a problem. So That entire day, my wife was dealing with a lot of things at the hospital. So I was at home trying to deal with other things because now I understand that we have to airlift her out of the country. So we were starting to work on getting things in order for that. Checking with the insurance, checking with the air ambulance, how much is that going to cost? And the doctors are making calls to figure out, okay, who's going to take this case in the United States? So everybody was working back and forth. So we thought everything was good. We was going to say, you know, we need probably like a day or two to put everything in motion. And so that day went pretty well. Not a big deal. It was the next day on the 10th, that Saturday. I remember sitting down and I was talking to someone at the computer. We was working something out. And I got another call. Said to come in. Come in. What you mean come in? Come in for what now? Again, this is COVID. They're not allowing people in the hospital. If you call them in, something went wrong again. So I'm like, what do you mean? Come in. What do you need me to do? I said, just tell me right now before I come. So they kind of broke it to me. And they said, last night, Emma suffered a heart attack or cardiac arrest. So I went from, yay, baby is born to, oh, baby has a problem too. Yay, it's fixable too. Baby has another problem. Just up and down, up and down. So I said, what do you mean she had a cardiac arrest? She said, yeah, she suffered a cardiac arrest. They were able to revive her. And come to find out, she had fluid around her heart. And that really put stress on the heart that was already working tough or working hard just to pump blood, even though it wasn't getting oxygen around the entire body. So they had to do emergency surgery right there in the NICU to relieve that pressure of fluid around the heart. And they put a tube in there to drain it out just to keep her alive. So when you think about a cardiac arrest, like I said, you always thinking about older folks having cardiac arrest or fat people or persons who are just unhealthy. But thinking of a baby having a cardiac arrest, like, okay, so how did you revive her? You're thinking about the chest compressions. How is that going to affect her? What went wrong with that? How long was she? Was her heart not pumping? Because that means that her body wasn't getting oxygen. She really wasn't getting oxygen to the rest of her body because her heart wasn't circulating the blood. So now if the heart stopped, that means that nothing is getting any oxygen. That just compounds the problems. So he said, come on in, we'll sit down and talk about it. So I jumped up and I headed to the hospital. Told the security actually there, said, yeah, they said, let you up. Went up to the NICU. It was Dr. Sands and Dr. Mendez was there. She's in charge of one of the main doctors there in the NICU section. Dr. Sands deal with the heart situation. So we sat down and they explained the whole situation to me again. Just explaining that, okay, yeah, she had this problem, but it's fixable. They already started making some calls to see who's going to take the case. And the reason why he said it is because I wasn't sure at that time, but it was kind of interesting that he said that they're looking to see who's going to take the case. Not knowing at that time, a child being born with this defect can be corrected, but having this defect and then suffering a cardiac arrest, that compounds the problem. And now most hospitals may not want to take that on because that's some serious liability. Your child could die and you could be sued, et cetera, yada, yada. So at the time, I didn't realize that. I was just wondering, okay, what do we have to do to deal with this problem? She said, the baby is fine. So I was able to see the baby. My wife was called up there. So both of us was there bedside with the baby. She was still alert. She was looking. She was moving. You know, so I said, okay, she's not that bad. You know, she recovered from this thing. I talked to her for a bit. And then we started discussing, okay, then how we need to get this baby out of the country and take her to Miami to have the surgery and make sure that she could survive. And this was now on the 10th. So we were preparing everything to leave on the 11th. Now, I did mention that there was one regret I had through this entire thing. Even now, there's only one regret I have. And the regret I have is dealing with insurance. Okay. So when I say insurance, I don't want you to think that I'm going to be bashing insurance or anything like that. It's far from that. But I do have a regret. And here's the regret. First of all, I know the importance of having insurance, life insurance and health insurance. Okay. Very important things. When I was in high school, this is back in 1993, my brother, was attacked and He was hit to the head with a metal baseball bat. So that kind of caused major brain damage. And so my mom had to have him airlifted to the United States for treatment. And even though we had a little bit of hiccups, it was the insurance that made it easier to get the air ambulance, for the hospital to accept him, for them to do everything on him, and to come out of it, even though he died, he still came out of it not pretty much owing a lot of money and not having to delay transportation until we could raise funds. So I knew from a young age that insurance is important, and having it is going to just fast track a lot of things. So what regret do I have? Well, here's the story behind this. With my first child, Diana, when we had her, before she was born, I said, okay, we're going to have insurance for her. That's not a problem. And insurance was allowed her to put her underneath my health insurance. So that's fine. But in order to afford my payments and her payments, at the time, which I had the top level Shape A, I'm with Kalina, I had the Shape A and I had it for a number of years, but I couldn't afford the Shape A with me and her. So I had to make a decision and I downgraded to Shape C. So here I am at Shape C and I said, you know what? I told my wife, I'm not comfortable being here at C because the coverage is not as much as I would like it to be, just in case something was to happen. So we made a plan, say that we will start a little side hustle. And from that side hustle, we will use that money to help pay for the insurance. So fast forward now 2 years and we're about to have Emma. It was about a few months before Emma's birth. And we sat down and said, hey, we've been delaying this for a while. We need to get this sorted out. So I called up my insurance agent. We sat down. We went over all the options of covering both my children and what's going to cost, what I'm going to get it up, etc. And we had enough money at that time through our side hustle to pay for Shape A for myself and both children. So I'm saying, okay, fine. Because my wife, she had her own insurance with a different company. So it's like, okay, fine. We have to do this. So I got all the paperwork and I just took it home just to review it a bit more and just got busy with things. And I kind of forgot about it for a second. So here it is. We were just thinking, all right, well, not a problem. Well, when Emma's born, because, you know, there's nothing wrong. Nothing showed up on scans to say that it was going to be an issue. So we were expecting a normal birth. So you say, you know what? Okay, well, when Emma's born, we just go back to the insurance and then at the same time, add it to my insurance and upgrade everyone up to Shape A one time. You know, we'd be fully covered because, you know, now we could kind of afford it. We'd have to work a little harder, but we can afford this. Oh boy. So when this happened, I was able to get her on my insurance, but I couldn't raise it because it's a heart defect. In other words, you're born with this. So insurance companies are not going to cover a certain amount. So wherever I am, I'm kind of like stuck there. I'm sure there's some way around it, but I'm kind of stuck at this level, which kind of, again, limits us on what all we can do. So I'm kind of upset at that because I would prefer to have everything covered. Between myself and my wife, we both had to claim insurance for Emma because we had coverage under my wife for her and then under myself for her. So we had to use that. And this is how we was able to get her out the country so quickly because we had insurance. That's the thing. I've been sacrificing that money for a number of years just in case. And here it is, a just in case came. And this is the one time I was left not fully covered. But the insurance company, they really helped us out a whole lot. They prepared so much things. I'm going to tell you what happened right now. And this is why it's so important to have good insurance and a good agent who can back you up, who actually knows you, knows your needs and is really going to help you out when you need that help. And again, keep in mind, this is during COVID. So many places are closed. This is very difficult. So here is where the roller coaster ride began. So we're now sitting trying to figure out exactly, okay, then what do we need to do to get her out of the country and get her to the hospital? So Dr. Sands and Dr. Mendes, they were making a few calls and they were saying, you know what, we found a hospital is going to accept her. An initial thing was close to $400,000. That was way out of what my insurance could cover. So we still talk to them, say, okay, well, what can you cover? What can't you cover? What will be left with? What bill would we have? And we work it out. And we still had about over $100,000+ that we would have to pay for out of pocket. I'm like, look here, I don't come from a rich family. I'm sorry. I don't have that type of money. And I barely make that in, 5 years or more. That's going to be rough for me to pay that off. We need to find some more options. So they made a few more calls. The doctor, Dr. Sands, and was very helpful, by the way. He called up some of his doctor friends. We got in contact with the Sassone Foundation there in the Bahamas, and they worked something out between the Bahamas and the Hulse children here in Miami. So they accepted the case. Of course, so it's insurance plus the Sassone house plus, you know, everyone just helping out as far as they could just to make sure that Emma has a place and the doctor's going to take this on. So we got to go ahead. So now the next thing is, okay, we need to take her out. So we need an air ambulance. Okay, fine. No problem. So working with insurance again, my wife insurance was able to cover the air ambulance. So we were talking to them, say, okay, what can you cover with the air ambulance to get them to come here and get out, et cetera, et cetera. So they were making calls back and forth, making sure that the air ambulance is set up. What's the cost going to be? Is it going to be covered? And it was kind of a tight situation. But again, BAF is who my wife goes with their insurance. And we've never had a problem with them. We've heard people talk about them, but the few times we had to claim, they've been extremely helpful, you know. Now, I've been with Kalina, when I say over 10 years, I mean for a long time. And my wife has been with BAF for a number of years. And I guess I really don't know what it is. All I could say is people just stepped up and stepped forward because there was not much of an issue. They were getting more upset than we were when things were happening. So what happened with this, and here's something that happened. I was trying to figure out, okay, then, so where do I need to go to catch this ambulance? Because people are saying, yeah, no need to worry. You can go over with the air ambulance. They take you over to the hospital and you're going to be with the baby. That's a problem. The problem was that the team that came for her from the United States had to bring so much equipment on the air ambulance that there was very little space for me. So we got this information the day that we were supposed to travel. So we're making calls, and then I got this call, said, first go to the hospital, and they're going to kick you from there. Then they said, no, it was probably the ambulance that was too packed. So, you know, go to the airport and wait there. And then, you know, then they said, no, you can't do that because it's not that. The thing is, we just cannot take you on the flight. We don't have the space. We are, the ambulance, the aircraft is packed. So I can't get on this flight. And my insurance, my wife's insurance, they were way more upset than I was because I was saying, you know, if I can't go on air ambulance, no problem. I'll take a commercial flight. Don't worry about it. So I was there trying to find which flight leaves out that day. And they were like, no, you should be able to go on this flight. Let me make a call. And they were calling people and found out exactly what the situation. That's what they called me and said, yeah, it's because of the equipment I had to bring in. So the equipment they brought in, the ideal thing they needed to do was to stabilize Emma because of the state that she was in. She had a cardiac arrest, but she has this heart condition. So they brought a cooling agent. And this blanket or this machine reduced her temperature to a low enough temperature, almost like cryogenics, that her vitals were very, very slow and very weak. This was enough to stabilize her, to handle the movement from the NICU to the ambulance, to the ambulance, to the aircraft, from the aircraft to fly to Miami, from Miami, ambulance to the hospital. So to manage all this, to make sure that she stays stable, she needed this cooling device. So it was a lot of things that were on this aircraft. So when I got the call back and they explained that, okay, yes, Mr. Penn, you can't go on the flight. So I'm looking for a flight and trying to get out. But everything is booked up. So I'm really pissed now. Like, oh my gosh, how is it that Emma's going to leave and I can't be with her? Now, that there is stress right there alone. But let's go back one step. before we could even leave the country, the United States Customs and Border Protection said, you know what, you can't come in this country unless you all have a passport or unless you have a letter from the U.S. Embassy saying that you can travel. Now, this is an emergency, and again, it's during COVID. So they're telling us that we need either a letter from the U.S. Embassy or a passport. Where am I going to get a passport in one day? The U.S. Embassy is closed. They're not even answering the phone. We went online, and I was up all night trying to fill out a whole visa thing through the U.S. Embassy, but they're asking for a passport. I'm like, this is a baby. She was just born yesterday. We don't have a passport for her. So we're trying to call persons, and no one is really who we could talk to who can tell us what to do. So it just so happened, we was like, you know what? Let's just try the passport office. And we called up the passport office. At least my wife called up the passport office, and she was there trying to figure out exactly, well, what can we do? And she spoke with Teresa Briggs at the passport office, and she found compassion with us. She understood exactly what was going on. And we're talking like this is the day before. We're talking like 3:30 in the evening when we were told that we couldn't leave the country without some kind of documentation. So we explained to her exactly what was going on. We had a letter written from the PMH telling exactly what it is that we need. We had a letter for U.S. Embassy, a letter for the passport, a letter for Customs Border. We just needed a letter for everyone signed off by the doctors at PMH. And Miss Teresa Briggs, she said, you know what? Just come. So the passport office closed at 4, y'all. Okay, if you don't know that, they close at 4. And this is like around 3:30. So my wife told me, look, yeah, I need you to go up there now, talk to this person and let her help us out. So I just dashed up there, not even knowing what's going on. I just dashed up there. And by the time I reached to traffic, it was pretty much 4 o'clock. So, like, the place was closed. So I'm knocking on windows, trying to find out. And then finally, this lady was just happened to walk out. And I told her, I'm looking for Ms. Briggs. She said, oh, you're Mr. Penn. I said, yeah, yeah. She said, okay, no problem. So she called the person inside. Ms. Briggs came down. She said, yes, yes, we were waiting for you. Now, inside there, because they were working the documents out, they needed a photo of Emma, which I did not have. And they needed some information. So I had to fill out the forms, etc. And I needed a photo. So I called my wife and said, I need you to go up there to take a picture of her to send to us because you can't have a passport without a photo. And again, these are things you would think that, oh, you just bypass it. No, but they have their rules. And we understood that. One, you're helping us out because you're close. Two, you found compassion with us, which we really appreciated. So we're just trying to do whatever you tell us to do, we're going to do. So I got my wife, and she contacted the doctor, and the doctor took a few shots and had to send it to my wife, and then my wife had to send it to me. Now, how am I going to get it from my phone to give it to her on a computer? So I had to get her email and send it from my phone to her email. And this is where Alive was having some issues with their phones or something because I sent it, but it didn't come through. So 5 minutes passed. 10 minutes passed, and then she came down. Mr. Penn, did you send stuff? I'm like, yeah, I sent it like 10 minutes ago. So she's checking, like, no, I didn't get it. I said, all right, we had to get her personal email to send it from my phone email to her personal email. Then she sent it from her personal email to the work email to get it on the computer, to print it on to the passport and get it done. So now this is like way after 5. She's there with just her and the security and myself. That's how late after the closing that they were there. The passport office, I don't care what y'all say, with the passport office, Ms. Teresa Briggs, I thank you so much for your efforts of just being patient with us during that time because we so needed that. You don't know us from Adam and Eve. You just heard our story and you made the call that you're going to do this. And man, I was there ready to cry because I'm like, if without this baby is not leaving this country. So that happened the day before. And this is where we started to see this pattern of people just helping out, people just doing what they should do, you know, just helping out, just hearing the plight and just having compassion and just saying, you know what, I'll do what I can do. So jump back to the next day now. So I can't go in the air ambulance. I'm trying to get on a flight and the flights are pretty much booked up and they're really expensive because, you know, it's like the same day. It's like $200 and something one way. I'm like, boy, we got to bite this bullet and I got to go. So I have Emma passport with me. My wife is at the hospital, and I'm mixed between the hospital, home, and trying to figure out how do I get to the airport. Like, I need to get out of this airport. Now, this was, again, during lockdown. So when you think about lockdown, and this is now on the 11th, because on the 9th and the 10th, we were moving back and forth. So here it is. Emma has to travel that morning, and we have to move back and forth between the hospital and the transportation. So here it is now. We're just trying to figure out exactly, okay, then how are we going to do this? So if you know, during the lockdown, you have to call to get permission to leave your house, okay, because we're locked down. No one is allowed on the street. So from Friday to Saturday, where it's back and forth so much between the home and the hospital, and calling every so often, what's her name? Woodside, the police officer Woodside. She was working both days. So the minute I call, I say, oh, this is Mr. Penn. She's like, Penn, you got to go to the hospital again. I said, she knew my name. She's like, just go. Just tell him I tell you to go on the road. Because I explained to her, my daughter was just born. She had a heart defect. We're trying to figure out how to get her out. And so she knew the story. So the minute I would call her and she heard my voice, this Penn again? Man, just go on the street. You just call me. Like, she was upset of me calling every time I was moving. She's like, just tell him I tell you to go and do what you have to do. Hurry up and take care of your baby. So I'm like, I don't even know this woman. But she was upset with me because I was calling her every time. Like, I have to go from the hospital to home or home to the airport or whatever. She's like, just go on the road and do what you got to do. So I remember her name is, I don't know, a first name or a number, whatever. But Woodside was her name. So here it is now. We could move about. And now I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get off this island. So while I'm there, trying to figure it out, say, I can't get a flight out. There's nothing yet. I leave the next day. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I'm not thinking that the passport, Emma's passport, need to travel with her. That's not on my mind. I'm just thinking of how am I going to get off this island. So I got this call, and I'm not sure who to this day called me. I thought it was Kalina, but I look at the number. I'm like, I don't recognize this number from anyone from Kalina. Then I said, it's probably someone from BAF. It's got to be someone from there. I'm like, someone called me. But I got a call. I say, Mr. Penn, we understand that you couldn't go on the air. And I say, yeah, I'm trying to find a commercial flight. He say, don't worry about it. Your name is at the desk. Just go to American Airlines and give them your name. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you're good. Just go there. You're booked on the flight. I think it was like a 12 o'clock flight or something like that. He said, just go up there now and tell them your name and you're good. I'm like, okay, thank you. And because there was so much going on, I had no idea or didn't even think of the ask, well, what's your name? Because I usually ask people names, you know, like if someone do something, like, what's your name? What's going on? So I was booked on it's the 146 flight, 146 p.m. flight, flight number 4433, and American Airlines, and they tell me, just go there and give them my name. So I went to the airport. My mother-in-law took me to the airport because I was riding with her and dropped me off. Sorry, my father-in-law, he dropped me off, and I went in there not knowing what to do, went to the system, punched my name in, and There it is, Rashad Penn, on the next flight. So that's how I got on American Airlines. Now, the timing was kind of good because Emma's flight for the air ambulance was scheduled to leave about 1:30. So I said, okay, well, they're going to be flying a little bit faster than us, depending on what they're flying. So we should arrive there about the same time at the airport. And then I'll figure out how to get from the airport. I'll just probably catch a taxi straight to the hospital. But at this time, I didn't even know where to go. I can be honest with you, I did not know where in the world to go. So all I knew was they were on a Jackson Memorial. That's all I really knew of. So I said, okay, no problem. Let me just get on this flight and I'll figure this out. So in the airport, I'm trying to call persons around, trying to figure out, okay, where at the hospital should I go? They say, just go to the hospital and ask for the children's ward. I say, okay, fine, no children's ward. I'll deal with that. That's not a problem. I'll deal with that. So we finally got on the aircraft. And heading to the aircraft, which is so weird. This is not really an issue, but I had luggage that I checked in, and I had my backpack. and my backpack is my laptop and other things. And so there are this other group of people in the front of me. And not to judge a book by its cover, I guess the way I look, because I was spaced out, security pulled me on the side. And I found it strange because the group that was before me, those guys look more suspicious to me, you know? They're the ones with the pants sagging low. They also had like backpack on here, all plaid up. And I'm like, that's someone you would probably want to check just to be sure. But I'm like, why did he stop me? He say, hey, buddy, how you doing? He say, going to the States? I'm like, yeah. So just step on the side for me. I'm like, okay, just need to check your bag. Just a random check. I'm like, random? Dude, I'm walking by myself and you find out to be random. You know, like I said, I probably just was walking spaced out. So I probably looked suspicious the way I was walking. So he pulled me over and went through my bag just to check it. And be like, all right, man, take it easy. I'm like, that's strange. It's kind of weird. But anyway, on the flight was weird because there's actually no social distancing. So a person started to make noise and they finally separated us on the plane. A bit more to balance the plane out anyhow. Landed in Miami. Of course, American Airlines parks at the end of the terminal. So it was a very long walk just to get to my luggage. And because hardly no one was in the airport, people were just getting their bags and leaving. I stopped at the bathroom for a second, stopped for something to drink. So by the time I reached the luggage area, like everyone was pretty much moving out and I couldn't find my bag. And finally, I just had to stop and ask someone. I was on the wrong side. I had to run all the way to the next side. And just as I reached in airshot, the guy was calling my name because he was ready to take my bag in the back. Anyway, grabbed that bag. So all this is just happening. Little issues. And these little issues start to compile. That's why I'm talking about it. They compile as you go along. So I'm in the airport. I'm using the airport Wi-Fi to like try. And because for some reason, the Alive, it switched over but wasn't working so well. Even though I put minutes on my top up. That's what it is. You put top minutes on your top up. But for some reason, just wouldn't switch over. So I said, okay, no, I can't worry about that. I have to get to the hospital. So I punched in the address they gave me. And I said, okay, we'll figure this out. Went outside, caught a taxi, and went up to the hospital. I did not know the hospital was this big, y'all. This is a huge, this thing is like huge. So even the taxi driver's like, well, where are you going? I'm like, the children's ward? He's like, I don't know. It was a Haitian guy. So he's got a very thick accent. So he's like, don't know where it is. I'm like, bro, I don't even know where it is. I said, you know what? Just take me to the main entrance. So we were riding for a while, just trying to find the main entrance. Finally found it, went through there, dropped me off. Okay, some construction was going on. So I'm like, okay, well, this is weird. Went inside. Security's out there. He's like, can I help you? Trying to find the children's ward. He's like, oh, no, man, that's on the other side. I'm like, on the other side of what? He's like, you got to walk this way, walk that way. It was literally about a block away. It's like, ah, okay. Just took me the directions. Started walking with my luggage. So as I'm walking, I get a call. And this guy called me up. He says, Mr. Penn. I say, yes. Are you the father of Emma Penn? I say, yeah. We need you back at the airport. I'm like, I just left the airport. What's happening at the airport? Says, Customs and Border Protection would not allow your daughter past their area without their passport. Say, do you have the passport? I'm like, oh, crap. Right in my pocket. So I'm like, okay. Okay, so where do I have to go? So he gave me specific address. And I said, hold on one second. I put it down on my phone. I don't know. I just said, put it down on my phone because I couldn't memorize that. Because I was thinking, just catch a taxi back to the airport. I said, anyway, I wrote the instructions down. I said, all right, let me see if I can find a taxi. So I'm on the road walking now. I'm like, okay, where do I find a taxi? Now, I know some people are saying, well, why didn't you just download the, was it Uber app or something? I'll talk about that later. I'll talk about that in a second. But I didn't have it at the time. And like I said, Alive was still taking a little time to switch over. So finally, it kind of switched. I had to shut my phone down, then restart it for it to realize that I'm roaming. And then it gives a bunch of information about roaming. And all this time, I'm trying to figure out I need to get back to the airport. So finally, when I got the ability to make a call, I'm outside and I'm trying to figure out, okay, how the hell am I going to get back to the airport? So, okay, you're looking around. There's no place for no taxi. There's no taxi stand. So I just kept walking a bit more to see if I could find like an entrance somewhere. Went to entrance and I'm like, okay, who can I ask? Because they have these weird persons around. Okay, I'm like, I'm not going to ask these people. Look like someone who's spit in your face and you catch some weird disease. I'm like, okay, let me avoid these people. So I just happened to see a guy walking in uniform, security guy. And I stopped him for a second. Say, yo, man, I need to catch a taxi. He's like, man, why don't you just use the Uber? I'm like, I've been trying to install the Uber app, but for some reason, my phone would not take it. It just would not. They would ask for the number, etc., like that. You put the information in. They're supposed to send you this code, but the code just never comes through. I said, I can't. For some reason, I can't install it. She said, all right, no problem. Then he told me, all right, well, call this number, this 44444 number. So I dial it, and lo and behold, it was in my phone. Anyhow, I'm like, okay, I don't remember putting that in my phone. Why is it Miami Taxi in my phone? It's like, whatever. I can't remember the last time I've been to Miami. Must have been so long ago, but I just probably left it there. So I call the taxi. You say, all right, no problem. It's going to be about 20 minutes. I'm like, 20 minutes? Now, here's the problem with that. I'm going to the emotional part of this. I told you before they had to reduce Emma's body temperature in order to transport her. So I'm thinking that this is a time-sensitive thing. How long can she be at this low temperature? I don't know. I just know that they were saying they need to get her to the hospital to stabilize her so they can hook her up to all type of whatever. But even though in the air ambulance, they carry most of this anyhow. So in my mind, I'm thinking I'm delaying the movement of the ambulance that my daughter is in, and every minute, every second counts. So this is why I'm feeling so nervous, because why didn't someone tell me this? Whose job was it to say, Mr. Penn, when you get to Miami, you need to go to this location and make sure I bring the passport? Or just would have told me, hey, who has the passport? We just keep it with us. Why? No one told me this. No one. So I'm like, I'm okay. There's no one to point blame at. I just need to get back to this point. So 20 minutes. It took about 25 to 28 minutes from the airport to get to the hospital, to the front where I wasn't supposed to go. And then there was another 10-minute walk before I got that call. Another 5-minute walk before I met the security. So where are we now? 20, 30, 35 minutes in. Then he's going to tell me it's going to be another 20-something minutes. So we're looking at 50-something minutes, close to an hour before I can even get in the taxi, and then another 20-something minutes, close to 30 minutes, back to this location. So I'm like, damn, this is going to be over an hour and a half that they've been sitting at the airport. My daughter is there, need to get at the airport, and I'm holding this up. So I'm nervous now because I'm like, you trying to tell me because I didn't ask the right questions or someone didn't tell me the right information that this hour and a half is going to cost me to kill my own daughter? Like, literally, that was in my mind. I just made decisions that really caused the death of my daughter. That's how razzled I was. You know, I was upset. I was angry. I was ready to cry. I was ready to cuss. A bunch of emotions going on. And I think at the same time, my mom called me and she was asking me, and she could hear in my voice the frustration because I was waiting for the taxi. So I think she heard my voice, how frustrated I am. I'm telling her, why didn't they tell me this and welcome that? And I'm just rowing on the side of the street. I know people's looking at me like, oh, gee, this boy going crazy. You need to call the police for him. Because I'm just rowing. And keep in mind, I have the Bluetooth in my ear. So from a distance, it looks like I'm just talking to myself. So it just looked like this boy going crazy on the side of the street. But I was just really frustrated. So I know my mom, being the woman that she is, she felt as if, oh man, there's a lot of stress. Yes, it's stressful, but I have to deal with it. But there's nothing else I can do. This is all that I can do. Uber's not working. I know no one in Miami. No one in Miami. It's not like you could just wave a taxi because there's no taxi anywhere. So I have to wait for this taxi to arrive. And so the taxi finally arrived. I flagged him down. We jumped in it. I gave him the address. Cuban guy, and you know, had a little chit chat along the way. Older guy, he seemed to know his way around. And I said, what's the quickest way you could get there? He said, no, don't worry, my friend. I get you there. So he
say, you have the, but he asked me, do you have the, do you have Google Map? I say, Google Map? He say, you can check on Google Map. So I put up, was able to pull up Google Map and see how we were moving. And he took some shortcuts. He knew his way around. So it took us about 15 minutes to get to this location, which was not at the main terminal. So good thing I had written down that address that the man called me with, because this is not at the actual airport. This is on a different part of the airport altogether, a small little building. It's almost like a fixed base operator set type thing. So we pull up to this little small building and say, right here, my friend, right here. Paid him his money, keep whatever change. I rushed inside. So when I went inside, because it's Customs and Border Patrol, and you go inside this building, there are a few chairs when you walk in and little soda machines, and then a bunch of doors, but there's no receptionist. I'm like, okay, who am I supposed to go to? So I walked all the way to the back, and everything is locked with like a key card to get through, but there's no receptionist, no window, nothing. So I went back to the front, again, feeling nervous because it's already been over an hour and a half or so, and they've been just sitting here waiting all this time. So I just started knocking on doors. Knock on the door, wait for a bit, no one, walk in, knock on the next one, knock, 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 just knocking on every door. No one is coming out. So finally, because I'm now about to try to find out who called me to pull that number up, this gentleman walked out of one door, so I ran him down. And I know he looked at me like he's ready to shoot me. He's like, who's this dude coming at me? I say, excuse me, sir. I got a call that I needed to bring a passport here. There's a aircraft on the tarmac waiting to come through here. He said, okay, give me one second. He took it, went in the back. So I'm just waiting. I mean, it's okay, like I said, there's no reception there or anything. So I'm just waiting in the back, standing up by this door, waiting for this guy. 20 minutes later, he comes out. No, another gentleman came out. Say, can I help you? I say, yeah, I gave a gentleman my passport to take my baby to the hospital. She's like, but they already left. I'm like, left when? I say, they left about 10 minutes ago. I'm like, what? So he went back in there and he's like, so him, the guy I gave the passport to, and another lady came out. He was like, well, I didn't know you were the father that you didn't say. It was like, yeah, because it's been a while. You guys been holding up on the plane. An ambulance. So he's like, okay. I say, all right, so where I got to go now? So he said, yeah, they went to the hospital. I'm like, okay. I need to call a taxi or something again. So the lady asked me again, don't you have Uber on it? I'm like, I've been standing here for the past 10 minutes trying to figure out why I can't install this Uber app. So she said, all right, don't worry about it. She took her phone out. She said, she'll call an Uber for me. I said, oh, thank you so much for that. Thank you. So they were putting the information in and finally got an Uber to accept it. And he said, all right, just wait outside. The Uber will come up. And say, fine, no problem. She's going to pay for it, whatever the charge is. She's going to deal with it. I said, okay, man, thank you so much for that. So now when I first came in, there's this older gentleman sitting down in the chair, Hispanic gentleman, because when I told him good afternoon, he didn't really acknowledge. And I heard him on the phone and he only speaking Spanish, so I didn't really pay no mind to him. So again, when I was leaving, he was still there. And I went outside and I was, again, still trying to figure out this Uber app, why this thing is not working, trying the different things and see what would happen. Then one of the Customs Border Protection guy came out and say, sir, you're Mr. Penn, right? I say, yeah, Mr. Penn. He said, this gentleman here was waiting for you. I say, waiting for me? So they spoke in Spanish for a bit and I understood a little bit, said that someone told him to come here and wait for me. I'm like, someone told you to come here and wait for me? He's like, yeah, he showed me on his phone, Roger. I say, Roger? I don't know a Roger. He said, yeah, Mr. Roger, tell me come for you, take you to a hospital. I said, I come for you. He's like, okay, you come for me. So, all right. But the information on it was right. It had my name, had my number, had everything. I'm like, this guy, who is this? No one told me about this. So I said, okay, well, let's go. Jumped in his car and he took me back to the hospital. Again, that was already paid for. Whoever this person is, I don't know. I don't know who Roger is. I don't know what it is. So I'll pause right there for a second. So this is why I was telling people, this is such a crazy emotional ride, because you have good news, then bad news and good news. And so you're up and down. You can go on the plane or you can't go on the plane. Catch a commercial flight or they're all booked out. Oh, the flight is straight. Okay, you're walking on. Stop here, sir. You know, go to the hospital. You're in the wrong place. Go this way. You find the right place. Oh, you got to go back to the airport. You go to the airport. Okay, they're finally gone. They're on their way, but you got to get your way back. I got to spend more money. Oh, I'll help you with this. Oh, don't worry about it. Someone's here for you. It's like, what? What kind of emotion? This is just day one, people. This is just day one. Within a few hours, all of this was happening. I mean, I went from extremely stressed out to extremely grateful to extremely happy to extremely safe. It was just the extremes. It was just moving from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And not knowing, again, I know no one in Miami. You know what I mean? So I'm on my own. I'm just figuring this out. I just need to get to the hospital with my baby. That's all I'm concerned about. So the guy finally took me to the hospital, dropped me off. Very nice, because he gave me some hand sanitizer and gloves. He said, you're going to the hospital, man. Just be safe up there. And gave me some gloves and everything. So I'm cool with that. So he took me to the right place, because I didn't know where to go. He knew exactly where to go. So he took me to the right place. And I went in, and it's a little bit different because there's so many different buildings. So I started to ask some security, and they told me where it was. Apparently, it was the Halls Children's Hospital in the East Wing. So they finally where that was. And so they told me exactly where it was. I went to the security, and because I wasn't there yet, Emma wasn't in the system as yet, I was trying to explain that I just came from the Bahamas and my baby just brought here and I just want to find out. At that same moment, as the security was trying to tell me, sir, you're not coming inside here, because they were not taking visitors, by the way. The hospital is not taking any visitors. So as she was about to tell me, sir, you need to go, a doctor was passing by and he overheard, I guess he heard the word Bahamas, pen, whatever. And he said, you're the father of the baby just came in. I was like, yeah, from the Bahamas. He said, yeah, the little girl who had to bring in with the heart. What do you call it? The transposition. He explained. I said, yeah, that's me. So he told the security, no, he's good. Give him his pass. So she gave me my pass and took me up. Like literally at that same second when he was about to kick me out, he walked up and he's like, he heard the story and said, all right, Mr. Penn, come with me. I'm like, okay. So I went with him and he took me up to the, where do we go first? The NICU, the neonatal ICU. So we went up there. And he was not heading there, because he had to go somewhere else. So he was trying to give me directions to where to go. And he said, all right, he took me on the fourth floor and told me, okay, take a left, right, blah, 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 follow this, follow that. And I kind of got lost, but I finally found it and they were waiting for me. So I walked into the NICU and so he told them who I were. And he said, okay, good. Yes, we got her in. We're stabilizing her. We're getting her hooked up to everything and make sure she's comfortable, etc. Da da da. And say a doctor would be with you soon. So you just, you know, have a seat in the waiting room for a minute. Say, okay. So I finally sat down and I'm like, okay, good. So I'm here. The baby's here. We're both in the hospital. Now, next problem. I have no place to stay. I have no place to stay. I'm sorry. I came across and I had no place to stay. I already had in my mind I was going to stay at the hospital. And then because now I'm realizing the hospital is not going to let you in there. Even the room that I was in had the big sign up that you're not supposed to be in there. I just was waiting in there because they wanted to talk to me. So I'm like, I can't stay in the hospital. Where the hell I could go? So this started rocking my brain, like, because this is now later in the evening coming towards sunset time. And I'm trying to figure out where am I going for the night. So I'm there like, okay, Emma's okay. She's okay. Doctors doing what they got to do. She's still alive. There's not a problem. They assured me because I told them, you sure? Because they knew you guys been on the tarmac for a bit. She's like, no, don't worry about it. They had her stabilized and they're just dealing with it. So now I need to tackle this problem of where the hell am I going to stay? So I was messaging my wife and telling her, okay, we're here, I'm good, blah, 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 it's a problem. I have no place to stay. I say, I need your help. I need you to check online and find some hotel nearby, you know, see if I could get something. So I left that up to her to figure out, please find something for me. Because for me to, even though I had my laptop with me, I got to pull it out and start looking. But I'm still nervous because I want to hear what's happening with Emma. What are you guys going to do? What's the thing? And when I tell you there were a lot of people in there, there were a lot of people. So they finally came in there for me. Said, "Oh, come on, you can see her now." So I went there and you walked around there. And like I said, it was about 8 or 10 people around her, man. How the NICU was set up. Of course, when you walk through this, the door, they have to let you in. You walk up to the receptionist, give them information. Then you have to clean up your hands. You have to wash your hands and everything. And then you walk further beyond the receptionist. And then there are like these little booths. And inside each booth, if you think at the end, there's only two sections where babies can be. And then a section on the side of that is two on one side, two on the other side, so four. And then it's kind of similar to what it is in Nassau. Have you ever been in the NICU in there? Similar to that. So they had Emma to the far right in the end booth, but only her was there. So every machine that was on that row was hooked up to her. So here it is. You walk into this and you're seeing these pumps. They call it pumps. These, you know, it's IV drips. When I see IV drips, you know, they're hanging on the little metal thing in the big water bag, wherever, and it drips down into you. No, they use these machines where they hook up syringes to, and it monitors how much it injects into you. So there's a whole row of them, like two rows of them actually, and then all these wires and stuff hooked up to Emma, and I'm like, what's happening here? Why is all this hooked up to her? Keep in mind, back in Nassau, the only thing she had was the tube in her chest, where they had to open up the hole in her chest to drain the fluid around her heart. So that was the only thing they had in Nassau. That's all I saw. And they had like a drip in her hand. Now we have all these lines and tubes and everywhere, and leads on her forehead and on her chest and on her foot and arms. It's like, what the hell is happening here? And they're talking to me, and I'm hearing them, but I'm just not listening. So that's why I said I had to be like a robot. I realized that these people are saying important things to me. You need to focus, bro. So I kind of blocked everything else out. Like, where am I going to stay? Block it out. And let's hook up the machines. Block it out. What are you saying? Whoever's in front of me, tell me what you're saying. So they started to talk a bit more about, all right, here's what's happening. They have on the cooling machine. They're going to start to warm her up slowly, but it's going to take a few days for that. Her heart rate is doing this. Her blood pressure is that. We're concerned about the brain. We're concerned about the liver, the kidneys, the intestines. These things we're going to look at. We're ordering an echocardiogram, and we're going to get an x-ray. And we're going to, like, one after the other, they're throwing these things in your face and you're hearing these stuff. And then they're using the medical terms. Okay? They're not like, we're going to poke a machine up to her to see what's going on in the body. No, we're going to order some ECG of this and EEG this and all these acronyms that meant nothing to me, that I had no idea what they were doing. So it was interesting because the first name I heard was Margarita. Margarita was a trainee nurse. She was being trained by another nurse. So there were two of those nurses were there, and they were hooking up all these things to her body. And because you hear names called, and I keep hearing her name being called, Margarita, you think of a drink, margarita, so you do that. But you had so many different names that I couldn't, my brain couldn't process them at the time because the names are so foreign to me. And I'll let you know, because now I know them. Yeah, like Dr. Tam, Dr. Babu, Dr. Martin, Dr. Sandu, Dr. Alferez, all these different names that I know now. But at the time, they're just throwing them out. All right, I'm Dr. This, I'm Dr. That, I'm Dr. This, I'm head of this, I'm this, I'm that. I'm like, okay. And just no idea what's going on. So the one thing I remember from that day was that they had her on some meds, and they were concerned about the acidity in her body. So they wanted to bring that down. So they wanted to make sure that they were doing labs and taking blood tests. And so they're just trying to ascertain where she was at that time. So we were talking for about an hour and a half or so, trying to figure out exactly, okay, then where is she now? What has to be done? So on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, okay, give us some time and we'll get back to you. So they put me back in the room. So my wife called me around that time. She already messaged me and said she found some place for me to stay. So I'm like, okay, cool. Unfortunately, we're looking at about like 3 days, 2 to 3 days. Now, the reason why I was concerned about that is because I heard about this place that you can stay whilst your child is at the hospital called the Ronald McDonald House. So I was really concerned about, hey, how do I get in there? So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to figure this out once I reach there. And once I reach there, I'll be okay. I don't have to worry about it. But, you know, people saying that it's far less than a hotel, you know, it's like a shared place, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't have to worry about spending no hotel prices, et cetera. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to get in this Ronald McDonald House. So that was the thing that I really wanted to get onto. But, coming over, you had to get, I didn't understand that there was a whole procedure to this thing. So I said, okay, well, I have some place to stay tonight and tomorrow night. And then between tonight and tomorrow, I'll figure out how I'm going to get into this Ronald McDonald House. And that was the plan. So I think I left there that night after 7 or 8 o'clock. It was dark. I just knew that. My wife told me where it is I need to check in, which is kind of a far away. It was about a 10-minute drive away. I think it was. So again, couldn't get the app to work. So I'm tired because it all day. This is like 2 days just running up and down. Finally left it. They say, you know what? It's nothing you do right now. The doctors will be back in tomorrow. Come in tomorrow. I say, all right, let me just get some sleep. Let me go home. Let me go to the hotel, check in and get some rest. So caught a taxi there, checked in, and just started to catch myself on exactly, okay, what do I have to do now? I was able to get to sleep a bit late that evening. I think after 12 or 1 a.m., just talking to my wife and trying to figure out, well, how do we get in this Ronald McDonald place and what are we going to do and what's the plan for the next day on getting about? I'm trying to figure out, taxi is costing like $20 back and forth. So that's like $40 a day. And then you're looking at, okay, how much food I'm going to have to eat, if I'm going to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or what I'm going to cost for that, plus the cost of the hotel, and trying to add all this up to see, like, how long can I sustain this? You know? And it's not that long. So I'm like, okay, this is a problem. We need to find out more about this Ronald McDonald House thing. I said, all right. I talked to my sisters, and one of my sisters was telling me about it when she had her son. She was telling me a bit more about it. And I said, I felt a bit more comfortable, so let me just figure out how this worked. So fast forward, this is now day three, which, this is day three? Yeah, so the 12th, on Monday. So day three of the story of Emma. And these days is where everything happened. These were most things, because you just didn't know what was going on. So, yeah. This day, so I got there like really early in the morning, like about 8 o'clock or something like that, came there. And so the doctors were already doing their rounds and everything. So I went up, got past security, got all the information that I needed. They sat me down and gave me some more information of what they expect when you come in the hospital, what you need to bring in, where to go, where not to go. Just give me a rundown of it. Doctor came in to talk to me, said they did a physical. Said her eye reaction was good, but the left side was a little bit tight and slow. So her belly is kind of tight. The fluid that's coming out of her is kind of a clear thing, so that's not of a problem. Later on, the anesthesiologist came in, and I was like, anesthesiologist? What do you need him for? So he was talking, and introduced himself to me, and then, he kind of disappeared for a while. And then this the first doctor that I remembered, her name was kind of hard to memorize, but I know it very well now. Dr. Sandhu, she's the cardiologist. So she came in and said, oh, very stern woman. She reminded me of a very strict judge. She's like, no nonsense. I've been doing this for a while. Here's the problem. Here's the issue. Here's the solution. That's it. She was very straightforward. But she told me what I liked when she talked to me. She told me, okay, here's the problem. First of all, your daughter's doing fine, but we have some issues that you look at. You know that the problem with the transposition of the arteries, which means that she's having problems getting oxygen through her body. So yeah, good. So she explained to me another concept. And this concept, I heard, but I didn't really understand it. And she said they need to do an atrial septal surgery thing. I'm like, oh, what? So she explained to me, the funny thing about when you have this defect with the transposition of the great arteries, the heart itself usually has a hole between either the ventricles or the atrium. Emma was born with a hole between the two atriums. So they call it the atrial septal defect. This is another defect. But the defect, what happens with this is it allows oxygenated blood to mix with the deoxygenated blood in the atrium. So that kind of gets some oxygen through the rest of the body, just a little bit. But it's a small hole. So they did a they did the ECG and the X-ray and all these other stuff and found that this hole is kind of small. So they want to actually open this hole. Like, why would you want to do that? So she explained that what happens is by opening the hole a bit more is going to allow that mixing of blood a bit more, and that would kind of stabilize her a bit more. I'm like, okay, makes sense. So she said that's the thing that they have to go for the surgery for today. This is the third day. You say, okay, this is the surgery. Cool. So she explained that situation to me, and that's why the anesthesiologist was there. So he came back and explained again, okay, what we're going to do, we're going to put her to sleep. She's going to not have, hopefully, much pain. The doctor's definitely going to either go through the navel or where they, or they're going to go through, make a new line in the thigh. They're going to go through the vein in the thigh and move all the way up and work that way. So they were kind of explaining to me exactly how this thing would work. So they want to open the hole in her, and while she's there, she wanna check the arteries and take some blood samples on both sides of the atrium just to see exactly what's going on. So this is what the surgery is going to be. So we had to sit down and talk for a bit, and then we had to go to the computer, and you're signing everything on the computer. It says exactly what the surgery is for, who's going to be in charge of the surgery, things are going to be needed, etc. There's a lot of information there. Just read over it for a bit. And then you have to sign on it to say that you gave permission and flew this thing. Same thing with anesthesiologists. They explain, here's the drugs we're going to use. Of course, I don't know what the drugs meant, but it's all there in the information to say that this is what they're going to use. And then, you know, you would sign that off. So this is now, like I said, I was there about 8. And they started to prep her. And it's around about 11 or so that they took her for the surgery. So I said, okay, well, I haven't eaten this morning. So whilst they're in surgery, let me get something to eat. So I just went out and I got something to eat. And so after I finished eating, I went back upstairs and waiting for them. And then they called for me around about 12:15, 12:20, something like that. So technically a little hour, over an hour later. So they called me and gave me some information. And what this was not about Emma, but about what I needed. Remember now, I was only staying in the hotel for about two or three days. So I still needed a place to go that is far less. And this Ronald McDonald House was the best place to do. So I get this call from the case manager who manages everything about Emma. And she gave me his number for this hospitality area. So for this lady called named Alice. So I said, okay, I'll have to call this Alice. Now I'm still using a life. I'm still roaming. And I didn't realize that, boy, roaming is eat your minutes fast, bro. Eat it fast. So at this time, I was running out of minutes. I was trying to make a call and couldn't make a call. So I found out that I couldn't make a call because I didn't have any more top-up minutes. Then I tried to top up, and then the phone wasn't working. I don't think it's the phone. It was alive. There's some glitch with that. That every time I do it, it wasn't working. So I had to call my wife for her to send top-up to my phone. It's too You see the stress I had to go through just to get one simple thing done. So we put about 50 or 70, I can't remember, a couple of dollars on it because I didn't realize how fast it was going to go. But I said I was going to get me a chip anyhow, a U.S. chip so I could use that. Anyway, Alice is another person at the hospitality. She's one of the hospitality coordinators. And man, she's been there from the beginning and helped out a whole lot. And she told me, okay, go to the RonaldMcDonald.com, give me the website. Fill out the form about how to stay, all this information, application, do all the information and put all that together. So pretty much all that happened whilst Emma was being in the surgery. Later on, they came back, I think close to 1, and told me, say, okay, great. The surgery was a success. Awesome. Cool. That is great. So she's out of surgery, but they noticed a few things whilst they were there, and they're going to run some more tests, but they won't know for right now. So the rest of that day was spent of me just trying to figure out how to get into the Ronald McDonald House. They were reporting to me every so often when they take lab works or whatever, and she kind of take a turn for the worse on this day, because when she first came in, her reaction time was kind of good. It reduced to the point of this, where they would take a light, you know, and they flash it in your eye to see if your pupils respond. Emma pupils were not responding. That's not a good thing at all. And then they were trying to see, well, how is she moving? So they would lift her hand or open her hand and see how she react. It was like nothing. So I'm like, what the hell is going on? So imagine you sitting there and you're seeing what's happening. I'm like, but just like a day ago, Emma was being able to look around. She was able to move her hands and her feet. Now it's like nothing. So I'm like, what y'all do to my baby? So I'm just trying to figure out exactly, and I'm still, you know, I'm in the place right now, but I know I need to get out of that place. So I'm trying to figure exactly how this is going to work. So all of this was going on. She's like, she took a turn for the worse. I'm like, did the surgery do this? Was it the anesthesiologist who did this? Like, what happened? Why is she responding like this? So like I said, I remember the two nurses who was there, Rhea and Margarita. So Margarita, and through Margarita, I got to know Rhea. So they were there always there, and I was asking them questions. They were telling me, okay, it could just be the anesthesia that's causing that, but we'll have to wait and see once it wears off and all these things. She's trying to explain to me what all these different things are, hook up against her. And I'm there ready to cry. I'm ready to cry because now you're trying to get in the Ronald McDonald House. You have like a day left inside the hotel that you are right now. You spend a bunch of money traveling up and down and eating food. And then you don't know what's going on with your daughter. And you're signing off on things. And every time you look, there's a bunch of new different doctors around her. Like, is this case that bad that you need so many different cardiologists and so many different pediatricians and so many this? It's like, what's going on? You know? So that there became very nerve-wracking for me. And like I say, this is just the third day. The next day became worse, man. But I'll leave that for the next topic because I think I'd burn your ears off for this one. But that was just day one and day two of coming to the United States, coming to Miami, and the up and down that I had to deal with, the stress I had to deal with, the happy and the sad and all the emotions that were going on. And this is what was happening. And this is how I felt just bringing it here. And like I said, if it wasn't for the insurance, even though I didn't have as much as I wanted to have, but if it wasn't for the insurance companies that we were paying, that I was paying month in, month out for years and realized the importance of it, like we probably would not even gotten this far. We'd have probably had to be stuck in Nassau for a while, just trying to figure that out. But once I got to Miami and Emma was too in Miami and the doctors started doing what they were doing and checking what was going on, it became is a different type of feeling now. It's the feeling of helplessness because there's nothing I can do. I really became or felt helpless. You're just watching people doing, you have to put all of your trust in their ability. You don't know these people, you know, so you have no other choice but to trust them. And not knowing what's going to happen the next hour. Things came down to the point where it was literally from day to day, they're saying day to day, but no, it was like hour to hour to half an hour to half an hour. So every half an hour, persons were coming in, checking this, checking, doing lab work on this, doing that, checking that out, ordering the x-ray, ordering the ECG, ordering this, echocardiogram. It's like just half an hour to half an hour to hour to hour. That's how it was. It wasn't day to day anymore. It was literally just from hour to hour. What's happening now? What can we do to keep her alive? Let's do that and let's see what happens. How is she responding to that? She responded well. Let's continue that. She responded bad. Okay, what we have to do to change that? It was the same thing every hour, just going through this on and on and on and on. And this was just wearing me down because I'm trying to keep up. I'm not a doctor, not a nurse. I'm not in the medical field. Although I understood a lot of what they were telling me because I kind of always liked biology. My mom was a nurse. And so you see some things, but some of the terms I didn't know, I would write them down. And then when I had time, I would go and research them online. So like, okay, what do they mean by this? You have a better understanding of what was going on. But this was the beginning of the emotional drain. I was already physically tired because, you know, I had very little sleep. Woke up early that morning. I was there early in the morning. And then it's like you're in school constantly. And you know, when your brain is tired, your body feels tired. So all this is going on, but I'm still trying to hold on to hear what's happening because the nurses are there and they work long hours, man. They were like 12-hour shifts or something. So they were for long hours. And I'm there for most of the time as well. But it just became emotionally draining. And I don't want to say the word depressing, but I started to feel a little bit depressed. I didn't, even though I was alone, I had family back home who were there for me. I know they were all praying. They were all giving support. But when you're there by yourself, you know, you tend to feel that. You really tend to feel that. But at the same time, it's like, I'm not going to give up on my baby. You have to be strong right now. Suck it up. You deal with this. You sit down and cry when you get back to the hotel. But for right now, focus. And this is, again, part of being callous. You just had to be strong. I know they were looking at me and wondering, how much can this man take? Because I know they're looking in my eyes like, will this man pass out? Will he cry? Will he break down? And I'm just looking them straight in the eyes and asking them questions. So what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do with that? Well, what does that mean? Okay, is this the, I'm just asking questions, just trying to understand what was going on, you know? So it was almost as if she was not my child, the way I was behaving. And that's the only way I could get through these first few days, because I felt it every time they told me something else was wrong. And that's what I talk about in the next section. When they told me certain things, there was a point I broke. It was just too much. No matter how hard I was trying to keep it in, because I didn't want to let it out. Because if I did let it out, I knew I couldn't be able to pull it back. It was just too much going on, you know? And to see Emma laying there, hook up to all these machines, not moving. You're talking to her, and no response, nothing. But you're still talking to her as if she was could hear you. And daddy is here, no matter what. Just get used to my voice. I'm always going to be here on the side of you. Don't feel like you're missing me. I'm going to do this. I'm going to. Everything I did, I told her. If I was going for lunch, and I'm going for lunch, I'm going to be back in a half an hour, okay? Behave yourself. I was talking to her like she was like a normal child. And this was the only thing that was keeping me sane. But the next day, which I'm going to talk about on another episode, is where I broke. And just thinking about it now, I feel like I'm going to break right now. But it was just too much. It was just too much for me. So thanks for listening to this episode right here. This is the second episode of the story of Emma. This is the transportation of her from PMH to Miami and stabilizing her, having no place to stay to having a place to stay for a few nights, and just trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to deal with this? How long is this going to go on? What I need to do to feel more comfortable and get my mind at ease, because there are still things going on through my mind, like where am I going to stay? Because I can't stay in this hotel forever. This is going to be too expensive to do that. I have no one with support here. There's no one who I can call on here. My family is all at home. They want to come, but because of COVID, the restrictions are so tough, because if they leave the country, getting back is going to be a problem. And so I'm like, you know what? Everybody stay put. I just need your help. If I call on you, just be ready to talk if I need to talk. So it was kind of tough. And my wife, I know she was going through her battles at home. So all of this was just going on. And every day trying to update everyone on, here's what's happening today. I started to keep notes, like literally time with time dates, just to say, here's what's happened on this day. Here's what happened on that day. This is the person who came to me, because it was just so much information for me to say, let me just, I'll sit back and take it. No. I had to keep notes on everything, because I would have forgotten. My mind was just, it was there, but it wasn't there. So as I remember, I would write it down in the notes, and then I would go home and at night and go over all the notes so I could know what to ask the next day. I was like, well, you said this, so what about that? When you're going to do this? But that's how the first day was. Just a really amazing roller coaster of emotions, people I didn't know. I still to this day don't know who got the ticket for the airline and who sent the guy there to pick me up. I still don't know to this day. I do not know. And no one said anything. I don't know who did that, but thank you so much for that, because that took a little bit of pressure away from me, enough that I was able to continue on to the next level. Like everything just started to line up piece by piece. As one thing got to the breaking point, at that point where I'm about to break, something switched it around. And this is another part that I'm going to bring up in the next section, where you're going to freak out. Because even to right now, I'm still so amazed at the things that happened the next day and the day after that. I mean, amazing things. Like, if you don't believe in God, you're going to believe in God. It's as simple as that. That's all I could say. But anyway, stay tuned for the next episode of the story of Emma Rose. Her story is still ongoing. It's still happening. She's doing very well now. But there's so much more to talk about. So we'll talk more about this on the next episode. Story of Emma Rose.